Welcome to another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. I'd be hard-pressed to find someone, anyone, who hasn't heard of the book series Chicken Soup for the Soul. More than 110 million copies have been published worldwide since its founding in 1993 by motivational speakers Jack Canfield and Mark Victor. It was their belief people could help each other by sharing life stories, and clearly they were on the money. Amy Newmark, my guest today, is the publisher, editor-in-chief, and co-author of the Chicken Soup for the Soul series. She and her husband, Bill Ruhana, the chairman and CEO, have kept the 23-year-old brand fresh, relevant, and very much in demand. They bought the company from Canfield and Victor in 2008. Before then, Amy spent 30 years working in finance and telecommunications. Here are some blow-your-mind stats about this iconic institution. Chicken Soup for the Soul is the best-selling trade book series of all time. There are more than 250 titles with, as I said, 110 million copies sold in the U.S. and Canada, more than 500 million worldwide. The books have been translated into 43 languages. Total worldwide retail sales of Soul-branded products exceed $2 billion. This company is so much more than books. There's a line of wholesome foods featuring more than 30 products, including, of course, soup. Chicken Soup for the Soul pet food. Chicken Soup for the Soul Productions, which includes the Hidden Heroes series that airs Saturday mornings on CBS. The Chicken Soup for the Soul podcast that offers a daily dose of inspiration, and on and on. So let's meet and get to know Amy Newmark. Welcome and thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Sandy. It's great to be on your podcast. I love doing mine, and I can tell that you love doing yours, too.
Oh, it is a labor of love. Amy, I want to dial back a bit. I read that you majored in Portuguese at Harvard, and you wrote your thesis about spoken word poetry in Brazil. So how did your transition from that into finance and telecommunications?
It really is interesting how my life has come full circle. So I started out in college majoring in Portuguese and minoring in French. I'm the person whose senior year of high school took only four courses, French, German, Latin, and English. I stopped taking math in 10th grade. I just loved languages so much. So I majored in languages in college, spent a lot of time in Brazil, did research for my honors thesis in Brazil, collecting poetry from people there. In Brazil, popular poetry was printed in little pamphlets and was basically used as a way of doing protests under the dictatorship. There was a military dictatorship at that time. And so regular people and a lot of poor people would voice their opinions through poetry, and they would get away with it, and the dictatorship wouldn't go after them.
And you knew about this?
Yeah. So I was doing that when I was 20. I was traveling around the poverty-stricken northeast part of Brazil, interviewing poets. It was actually incredibly crazy when I think about it now. I had blonde hair down to my waist, blue eyes. I was pale as a ghost. I'm in this poverty-stricken
part of
Brazil.
So we're calling Amy the anomaly.
I had a gold ring on every one of my fingers, like 8 gold rings. And I'm traveling around the northeast of Brazil.
Alone?
Alone. No cell phones, of course. This was in 1978. Mm-hmm. And nothing ever happened to me, and everybody took care of me. And if they asked me about the rings on my fingers, I said, of course, they're not real. Because there, if people got married, the wedding band was like a soda pop ring or something. Mm. I mean, they had no money. So anyway, I then went into finance, and then I'll get into that in a moment. But then full circle back to now, my new career, I'm collecting stories from the people again.
So what goes around, huh?
It's really funny that, you know, 30 years later, I was back to doing that again. But the finance part, that came about when I graduated from college. You can imagine there was no market for somebody who spoke Portuguese and majored in and minored
well,
in
did you
French.
Want to work for the UN, or did you think you wanted to do something on a diplomatic level, having learned these languages and being fluent in several languages?
Well, I was just a kid. You know how dumb you are when you're 21 years old. So I had this idea that I would join the Peace Corps.
Well, that's not so dumb.
Except that at that time, the Peace Corps was often infiltrated for political reasons. There would be ostensibly Peace Corps volunteers who were sent into countries who actually were representing the CIA or other people. Hmm. So I didn't want to do that. Mm. And then I had this idea I was going to be a Brazilian rock music promoter and bring Brazilian rock bands to the United States. But of course, I was 21, so that wasn't happening. But while I was in Brazil, I discovered, weirdly, that I was fascinated by their telecommunications system, because they had been so late to get telephone systems, et cetera, that they had things like call forwarding, call waiting, all of these fancy new things that we didn't have in the United States, because you only got those if you bought the brand new equipment, and you only were buying the brand new equipment if you were late to getting telephone systems. So in Brazil, I saw all this cool stuff that we didn't have back here because we were still using up our older systems that our telephone companies had installed decades earlier. So when I came back from Brazil, my senior year of college, I took a job writing a telecommunications newsletter for US and Canadian companies that wanted to sell equipment to Brazilian telephone companies. And I used my fluency in Portuguese to provide information to these English-speaking US and Canadian companies. So I ended up going into telecommunications that way.
And enjoying it because you stayed for 30 years.
Yeah, I loved it. And I ended up going into consulting. Then I went to Wall Street, became an analyst, a Wall Street analyst, discovered another thing inside me, which was a great desire to expose fraudulent companies. And so I spent a good part of my Wall Street career exposing companies that were basically lying to their investors, overstating their revenues. I loved doing that. I loved interrogating the facts. I loved figuring out who was lying and then exposing them, letting the SEC know, hey, here's one you have to shut down, warning investors off. And then I ended up actually running my own hedge fund where I used that expertise. And then finally went into a telecommunications company and was part of the startup management team of that company. And then after that, joined a whole bunch of different corporate boards, all telecom and technology companies, where I could help these public companies that were young, you know, get going, raise capital. And then finally, chicken soup for the soul.
Well, that's where I would like to go next. Were you a chicken soup groupie? Was there something missing in your life that attracted you to this iconic series?
No, I was one of the few people in America who had not been reading the books. When we first were looking at buying the company, we did a survey and we discovered that something like 88.7% of Americans knew about Chicken Soup for the Soul and knew what it was. And I did know what it was.
Right.
And I did discover in my library one Chicken Soup for the Soul book, the original one, which a friend had given to me when I was getting divorced back in 1994, 1995. But I hadn't read any of the books. And so I came to it with a completely fresh approach, which I think was great because instead of being tied up with the first 15-year history, I came in with a 2008 sensibility and applied that to relaunching the brand, making the books even more relevant, fresher, more inclusive, more diversified. So I did a quick immersion course. I read 100 Chicken Soup for the Soul books in a three-month period from 2007 to 2008, getting ready to become publisher.
But how did that happen? Why did you even entertain the idea of buying the company?
My husband and I were looking for something new to do, and we had looked at a bunch of different opportunities and rejected them for various reasons. And a friend of mine was dating a guy who knew Jack Canfield and Mark Victor.
The founders.
Yeah. Now, Mark Victor Hansen, his last name is Hansen, but he loves to be called Mark Victor, as you called him. But this guy knew Jack Canfield and Mark Victor Hansen, and he knew that they wanted to sell. Mark was getting a divorce. California was split it up state.
Right.
So they wanted to sell, and they also were so busy with their careers because they are very important motivational speakers. They have lots of books outside of Chicken Soup for the Soul books. So it was time for them to move on and take this amazing thing that they created that they love so much and hand it off to somebody who they believed would carry on the legacy that they had created, do it right, respect the readers, respect the writers, and we were the people. So we bought the company April 4th, 2008, and we plunged ahead with it, and it has been a whirlwind. I can't believe it's already been 8 years, and I think I've created more than 125 new books since then.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Amy Newmark, who's the publisher, editor-in-chief, and co-author of the Chicken Soup for the Soul series. So you buy this company, which is doing well.
Yeah, it's doing well. And of course, it's fabulous and everybody loves it. And the thing is, I read 100 old Chicken Soup for the Soul books and discovered that this Wall Street analyst, short seller, hedge fund manager, all of these things that I thought I was, I discovered there was another person lurking inside me. And that was a person who knew exactly what to do to be the publisher of Chicken Soup for the Soul.
Does that surprise you?
It totally surprised me. I read the books and I said, oh my gosh, I know what to do. I had no idea that I could do this. And I started writing down title ideas. And you know, it's 8 years later and I'm still publishing some of those titles that I thought of back then. I was so enthusiastic. I actually found that I had to start changing my contact lenses every week instead of every 2 weeks, because in reading all of the old books, I would be laughing, I would be crying. The tears were ruining my contact lenses.
So you just started to write some of these books? I want to know about that. What does it mean to be a co-author? I guess you have tremendous belief in yourself.
Well, it's funny. I kind of do, but you know, there's something called imposter syndrome where even very successful people will all of a sudden say, wait a minute, I don't know if everybody realizes I have no idea what I'm doing. You know, so even if you're doing something very successfully, once in a while you have this crisis and you're insecure.
Kidding. Sure.
So I have had bouts of that, but you just have to keep going. You have a publishing schedule and that book has to come out every month. But what happened was that I just knew, and then we took two people from the old company, really wonderful people who have stayed with us, and they guided me through the process early on of how you create a manuscript. And I think what I did was I showed tremendous respect for our writers, and so we started getting thousands of stories submitted for these books. When I first took over Chicken Soup for the Soul, we would get 800 or 1,000 stories submitted for a book. Now we're getting 5,000 stories submitted for every book, and our job is to read all of those stories.
You're no kidding.
It's like the ultimate in crowdsourcing, right? That's the big buzzword now, crowdsourcing. We crowdsource, then we read all the stories, then we curate, another buzzword for today, and then I edit. And I've always been very good at writing and grammar and all of that. And I just shape these books, and it's a labor of love. Somehow I just knew how to do it, especially with the guidance of Diet Corona and Barbara LaMonaco, these two wonderful people we took from the old company.
Tell me how this birthing begins. I contact you and I say, I have a wonderful addition, I think, for your series, Raising Great Kids. Take me on this journey.
Okay, that actually does not happen. We do not take title ideas from the public.
Okay.
For legal reasons. In fact, I am never shown a title idea from the public, because somebody might suggest, you should do a book about mothers and daughters. And then we do a book because it was on our schedule anyway. And then somebody says, oh, that was my idea. So I never take title ideas from the public. We're just like a Hollywood studio. We don't want to hear title ideas from the public. We come up with the ideas ourselves. So as an example, our most recent book, it's called Chicken Soup for the Soul, The Joy of Less. So the inception of this book is that probably a year ago, I just thought about it. And I said, you know, we've never done a book about decluttering your home, your life, your calendar, your brain, everything. We need to do that book. And most of the title ideas come about because I decide that I would like to read such a book.
Mm-hmm. You personalize it.
So I really needed a book about the joy of less. I needed a book that would help me become motivated.
Simplify my life.
To simplify my life, throw away all that junk in my house, et cetera. So then we talk about it among our staff, our fabulous editorial staff. And then we send a call out. We do an emailed call out to around 5,000 or 6,000 people who are on our email list.
Aye, aye, aye.
These are people who we've published before, for whom we still have working emails. We've published way more numbers than that because we've been in business 23 years. We also post this title on our website. People submit the stories to our website and we'll get thousands of stories submitted. Then we have a team of editors who read all of those stories that are submitted. They boil it down to a few hundred finalists. And all along, they're telling me what's going on, what they're seeing, because I let the stories that are coming in tell me what the book is going to be. I never go in with a preconceived notion. the stories coming in tell me what the public is actually interested in reading about. What are the important topics right now? What are people concerned about? And then I reflect that back through what I choose for the book. So then I'll read the few hundred finalists for the book, and then I'll narrow it down to the final 101, and then I will edit those stories. Some come in perfect shape. Some need a lot of editing, even rewriting. And we work very closely with our writers. We are very respectful of these freelance writers who give us stories. We pay them the highest in the industry. We give them 10 free copies of their book. They love us because we treat them better than any other publisher treats freelance writers. And then I shape this book and we publish it. And so that's what happens every single time. And we're doing about 12 books a year. So every month, another one comes out and it has gone through this process.
Are all the books successful?
Almost all of them are successful.
Does that surprise you?
No, because Chicken Soup for the Soul is such a great concept. The idea of taking 101 stories.
And it's always that number?
Yes.
Why?
Originally, Jack and Mark did 101 because they said, well, we would have done 100, but we're going to give you one more just to set you on the path to future greatness. And then the old publisher had eventually slimmed the books down, you know, to maybe only 70 or 80 stories. But I when I took over, I said, we're going back to 101. Every single book will have 101.
So it's 101 stories
from 101 different people.
Yeah.
And what I love about that is that most self-help books are written from, you know, by one person representing one point of view, and
right.
you either connect with it or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't connect with it, it's not helpful. I love the fact that we give you 101 people giving you their best advice, their best tips, what worked for them, what didn't work for them. You are bound to find stories that will resonate with you. And so reading this new book, as an example, Chicken Soup for the Soul, The Joy of Less, which is about decluttering your home, decluttering your calendar, and also getting offline, not doing as much online stuff, going back to living, breathing people again. I bet everybody will find 10 or 20 stories that speak to them directly and that really help them change their lives. So I love the fact that you're getting advice that people are selflessly sharing with you. And sometimes people use Chicken Soup for the Soul as their first confidant. They tell us stories they've never even told their own families.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
they, for some reason, decide to share those stories with 100,000 people. And even though they've never told, you know, their own mother the story.
If I submitted a story to this decluttering book, for example, and I had never, ever, ever written anything before, it's very conceivable that you could publish my story, that it could resonate with you, even though I don't have a history with you.
Yes, because we read these stories for plot. And so if a story comes in that has a great plot, a great message, it's unique, and it's not written well, we will work with the writer. I will rewrite the story for that person.
Mm-hmm.
The only negative is maybe once a year, somebody whose story I have really edited a lot will say, I am so excited. I'm now a published writer. I'm going to adopt this as my career.
And
then I'm like, oh, no.
Hold back.
Oh, no, yeah. No, yeah. No, no, no. Don't you remember I edited your story?
Uh-huh.
But in general, we give a lot of people their first opportunity ever to get published. And here's what's interesting. We have published people who got such a boost of confidence from this and who were such good writers, naturally, that they have gone on to become published authors with many books. And they started out.
They got their feet wet with you.
One Chicken Soup for the Soul story. And it's happened so many times that we have launched the career of a wonderful writer.
Wow, what a great feeling. Once again, if you're just joining us, my guest today is Amy Newmark, publisher, editor-in-chief, and co-author of the Chicken Soup for the Soul series. You know, your book, The Joy of Less, was co-written with Brooke Burke Charvet, who happens also to host your Hidden Heroes series on CBS. So you also co-author with names that are bold-faced as well as unfamiliar names. I saw Deborah Norville,
That's
a couple
correct.
Of others. How does that match work?
It works out really well because we will bring in somebody who has expertise in a particular area. For example, Brooke Burke Charvet is a very busy actress. She has a big website called modernmom.com. She has 4 kids, all young. They're all still living at home. And she is one busy woman. And she has perfected this art of enjoying the joy of less. So she wrote a story for us, for example, for this book about how she and her family decided very quickly to move. It was right around Christmas time last year. And they were moving from a humongous house to a regular large house. And I think she said they went down by size, something like 2/3. And so she and her husband and the 4 kids had to start purging their possessions. And she wrote a story about how they went through a process called gift, give, garbage. Gift was when they had something that they realized, oh, so-and-so would really love this. You know, my friend Susie would love this, or my teacher would love this for the classroom, or whatever. So those were the gift items. Give was stuff they were giving to the thrift shop, mm-hmm. and garbage was stuff that they were going to throw out. And so she taught her kids, give, gift, garbage. They all went through this process, and within a few weeks moved from this humongous house to a normal Hollywood large house. And so she wrote about that, but she lives her life that way. I mean, I remember looking at her Modern Mom blog prior to even contracting with her to work on the book with me and saw her writing about how every single month she goes through her closet and gets rid of stuff, which is admirable. Because wouldn't it be wonderful to open your closet door and only see things that fit you,
that
you are
really
in style,
need.
That mm-hmm. look good on you, mm-hmm. and that you're actually wearing, right? And the other stuff she gives to her friends, she said she and her friends share clothes all the time, which is a great idea. And so she was the perfect person to work with me on the book. And we do have so many stories in there where we give people really good advice on how to approach purging in your own house. One of the great concepts in this book, Chicken Soup for the Soul, The Joy of Less, is that something that you're just holding on to that you're not using could be someone else's blessing. And that's something that Brooke Charvet does a lot.
Now let's move from books to some of your other products. How did the human food and the pet food get off the ground?
So the pet food came about even before we bought the company. The dog food and cat food line was already very successful even before 2008 when we bought the company. It's a very high-end dog food and cat food, all made in the USA, which is very important for pet food. It's a super premium food, although because we're Chicken Soup for the Soul, it's not sold for a super premium price. We always offer great value. With the books, I mean, our books are big, thick books for $14.95. Most publishers would charge $19.95 for them. The dog food and cat food is the same. We take great pride in the fact that our food, a bit of our revenues goes to support shelters, and we donate tons of food to shelters, and we promote adoption of dogs and cats from shelters. So that's our dog and cat food line. The food for people, right now it's on the back burner. Now, the television business, that's another new business for us because we feel that people need to get their Chicken Soup for the Soul stories, not just in books, but we really feel like we're the world's favorite storyteller. And so we don't have to tell our stories just in books. We can tell our stories on my Chicken Soup for the Soul podcast. We can tell our stories on television and movies. So our television business has one show right now on CBS, Chicken Soup for the Soul's Hidden Heroes. And this is a very, very cool show. It's on weekend mornings. Most markets, it's Saturday. Some markets, it's Sunday. Sometimes it moves around depending on whether there are sports conflicts with it. And it's a hidden camera show where we put actors in positions where they create scenarios where members of the public can rise to the challenge and show the hidden heroes within themselves and help a stranger who has dropped stuff all over the street or is being bullied or needs help, you know, maybe an elderly man needs help operating his cell phone, something like that. So that show is hosted by Brooke Burke-Charvet. And so that's one of our shows.
A little candid camera-ish.
It's a little candid camera-ish. We're renewed for a second season. We might change the format up a little bit, but the same idea, showing the basic goodness in people and how people can rise to the challenge and be kinder, even to strangers, and reveal within themselves their ability to do good deeds, which is great because when you do a good deed for somebody, the biggest beneficiary is yourself, right? You feel so good doing that good deed. You feel even better than the person who you did the deed for.
Sure.
And we have a lot of other TV shows under development.
When you first bought this company in 2008, did you ever envision that it would have all these other tentacles, so to speak?
Absolutely. We knew this was exactly what we intended to do. And when Jack Canfield and Mark Victor Hansen sold us the business, and by the way, remained shareholders of it because they still wanted to be a part of it then, they knew we were going to take it in these directions because my husband had been a movie producer. He had been in the entertainment business for a good part of his career, and he knew how to do this. And we knew that this was a brand that was not just about books. This was a brand that was about storytelling and changing people's lives for the better through storytelling. And storytelling is done visually, right?
Of course, sure.
And through audio and through books. Mm-hmm. It's done in many, many different ways.
So what's on the horizon for the company? Where else do you want to go? Where else do you want to take it?
Well, we have been really excited about how much we're doing now in the nonprofit world. And this is something that Bill and I get very excited about. And we have a lot of altruistic employees who are excited about this, too. When we took on this business, we could have gone off and retired. I mean, I had just sent the last child off to college. I had just turned 50. We could have gone on a world cruise or done something different, or I could have just stayed on corporate boards part-time. Mm-hmm. But we decided to do the biggest job of our lives, right? Take on Chicken Soup for the Soul and work 24/7.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
24/7, 365.
Yeah.
That's us. So this had to be more than just a business. This had to be a mission for us. And we are using the power of storytelling to do good in the world. So a portion of our revenues goes for a lot of different nonprofit causes. I mentioned the dog and cat promotion from the shelters.
Right.
We support shelters. We have an entity called Humpty Dumpty Institute that does a lot of work fighting disease, poverty, et cetera, all around the world. They get a portion of our revenues. We pick specific books to donate money from. So, for example, we raised tens of thousands of dollars for the Alzheimer's Association with a book that I put out in April of 2014 about Alzheimer's. We're raising money for traumatic brain injuries. We're raising money for Bob Woodruff Foundation with an upcoming book called Spirit of America. We do a lot of work for nonprofits. And then here's the most exciting thing. We're starting to work with nonprofits, with foundations on specific projects. So a very important one that we're working on is with a gentleman named Dr. Milton Boniuk, who is an amazing man. He lives in Houston. He's originally from Canada. He is Jewish. He moved from Canada to Houston. He's one of the preeminent eye surgeons in the world. He's in his early 80s. He's still operating, still has a steady hand. People send him cases from all over the world. But he's also a very wealthy man who wants to give back. And so he has set up a foundation, the Boniuk Foundation. And his mission is to reduce intolerance in the world, reduce anti-Semitism, reduce religious intolerance in general, reduce bullying, reduce all kinds of intolerance, and promote respect, compassion, kindness, starting with kids. And so the Boniuk Foundation is working with Chicken Soup for the Soul, and we've put out 3 books together so far. Chicken Soup for the Soul, Be the Best You Can Be, Create Your Best Future, and Raising Great Kids. And here's the best thing we're doing, and I know you're going to get excited about this. We have a nationwide literacy-based bullying prevention program that we are rolling out in schools now nationwide. It's called Chicken Soup for the Soul, Hallway Heroes. It's sponsored by the Boniuk Foundation, and we're using our stories, which parents and kids and educators have loved and have been using for 20 years in the schools. We're now using them in an organized curriculum to prevent bullying behavior. So that is one of the most exciting things we're doing now.
That's excellent. Well, we've run out of time. It was such a pleasure to meet you and hear all about Chicken Soup for the Soul. Thank you so much, Amy, for sharing your story with us.
Thank you. It was really a pleasure to be on your show.
Join us for another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. And if you have a great idea for an interview, contact us at sandyclineshow.com.